Your dedication in the book said to Clark, my son who saw so much. Can you give me an idea of what that meant?
Well, I think all of our dear departed ones are very special, but Clark was a very special kid and young man. He died at 33. And he was just, he was brilliant, he was handsome, he was clever, he was very funny. He was very soft-hearted and very kind, particularly kind, I believe. And, of course, not very kind to himself, ultimately. He was the father of a four-year-old. He lived in Minnesota, had a wife and a child. He had had alcoholism early in his life, drug addiction, had a real struggle with those things, and then at the age of 25 had gotten sober and had just really had a wonderful sobriety, and then he relapsed. And of course the relapse and the alcoholism are in a nutshell what I consider to be the ultimate cause of his death by his own hand, although there were probably other emotional issues, but he was in a vulnerable place and he was drinking, and that's what happened.
Do you, I know that the first question many families and loved ones ask is why. Do you feel like you've made peace with that why?
Oh, absolutely. I certainly have. And there's no answer to it, first of all, because I believe after writing in great depth about suicide, I've come to the understanding, at least I think it's an understanding, that the issue of psychic, which is the overriding similarity of all suicides in all the cases that I've read about, with all the experts that I've talked to, the issue of psychic is predominant, and whether or not it's accompanied by alcoholism or by a mental condition or by depression, it doesn't seem to make too much difference. It's still the predominant characteristic, psychological pain. And given that, the matter of coming to peace means a lot of things to different people. To me, in part, it meant first of all, surviving and living through it, but also understanding that it's a condition. It's as though somebody has cancer. You try to understand that the issue of suicide has been a taboo. And my writing and my sharing about it, I hope, has helped other people understand that it's not a taboo. It should be thought of as a condition, perhaps an illness, something to be addressed in many different ways, but certainly not taboo.
And I think one of the things that I've learned through researching this is that there's so many stigmas attached to suicide, and that depression is a weakness that we just don't want to admit to. I'm very open about my own depression and my own struggles. I find a lot of people are not. Do you find that?
I think it's a human condition. I don't think it's... My own personal view about this is that depression is not a sign, necessarily, of mental illness or of other overriding... I think depression is a matter of life. I don't think most of us will go through depressions in our lives, sometimes seriously enough to take medication for. In my case, I think I took a lot of medication for a lot of different things when I was drinking. Of course, I was medicating my depression with a depressant, because alcohol is a depressant. I didn't know that. However, I was lucky enough to learn pretty early on that if I was exercising, I was not depressed, and I still work with that. I do not take anything and haven't for 26 years and wouldn't, because I don't think the issue for me of the depression itself is the key. I think it's the action one takes upon feeling that is the important issue, whether it's getting to a doctor, getting to a gym, figuring out a different way to do things, addressing a family problem, going to a marriage counselor. There are a lot of things. This is a depressing world,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty clear that we're emotionally ill-equipped to handle a lot of things that happen, but that they can be gotten through. I also think that we might mention right here the issue of spiritual approach and the issue of faith. I think the issue of faith is very seldom talked about in regards to depression, in regards to suicide, and I think it's a key factor.
And did you not go through a time where you shook your fist at God? Could you?
No.
You really didn't?
No. I mean, I was, of course, I was on the floor, and I didn't think I would make it. But I don't think of God that way, quite frankly. I just don't. First of all, it's not why me. I mean, it's more like why not. I mean, this is the way the universe works. No.
And
anyway, the thing that got me through this was meditation and being closer to God.
Do you think God uses this as a lesson? Some people...
I don't think anything about it. I don't have any clue. I do think that our relationship with whatever higher power we have is our responsibility to take the actions. And if we believe that God forgives and that God heals and that there are miracles, which I do, all of which I do, then we act as if that's true. And I act as if that's true. I mean, I take a lot on faith. I have very, very deep faith. And my fervent prayer is always, thy will be done. And I don't pretend to know what that is. But I try to take the actions that are going to be to my best interest, to my best position as far as my, you know, clearing the decks of my own, clearing my side of the street and taking the actions that I believe are healthy. But
when did you grow up? You left me behind here. When did you grow up?
Where did I grow
up? No, when? I mean, when do you, I have struggled to get to that point. Did that always come somewhat easily to you?
It always did, I must say. It always did. I don't know, I was raised a Methodist. I mean, I guess I got it in the Methodist Church and from the faith and the things that were told to me. You know, we were, I suppose we were influenced by the sort of the Emersonians and the East Coast poets and Thoreau and people like that. I suppose we talked about them and read them a lot and went to church and made a lot of music. But I never had any... I mean, you go through that adolescent kind of thing where you wouldn't pray if your life depended on it, you know. Post-adolescent, young adult nihilism that comes to us all at some point. But I just, you know, my experience has taught me that I'm better off in a surrendered place. I mean, I'm better off because I feel better. And I know that it's going to be all right. In fact, I know that it is all right. That's what's helped me, I think, to get through Clark's suicide.
And how long did that process take? I mean, when families are going through this, how do you walk them through it? How do you say, start here, and what would be the first thing you would say to a family member? Or just
talk about it. Talk about it with whoever you can, wherever you can. Don't let people tell you not to talk about it. And don't let people tell you you are through grieving when you know you're not. Find out everything you can learn about suicide. Don't keep it a secret to your family, to your friends, even if there are children involved who you think are too young to know. Believe me, they'll make assumptions, and their assumptions will be much more terrible than the truth. To talk about it, to take care of themselves, to do something physically for themselves, to have a massage, to go, you know, get some body work, to take a hot bath, to go to a good movie, to get some funny movies around eventually when they can handle that, to be with people, to gather in groups, to find a suicide recovery group, because one of the things you'll find in a suicide recovery group, surprisingly enough, is laughter. And laughter heals because you're all laughing. You know, they say, you know, we plan and God laughs, but the thing is to take part in that universal laughter, because this planet is much too serious not to be laughed at, you know.
Did you feel any guilt the first time you laughed, or when you felt some sense of normalcy and of emotions coming back, did you?
Yeah, you always feel kind of like a, some kind of an imposter. But you deserve to have a life, you deserve to go on, you deserve to have friends, you deserve to have a wonderful, joyous life. That's maybe the message of the book I wrote, really, about suicide, because, yes, it's not okay just to survive. I have a book that I will start to write. I've written and thought a lot about it, but I'm going to write it next year. It's called The Seven T's, Surviving Suicide. And it's the how-to. It's sort of, you know, the seven issues that we go through: talking, therapy, truth. And it ends with triumph, because if you're not happy, then something's wrong. Something's wrong. It's usually that you think, or I think, that I could have done it differently. The guilt is a very clear assertion of the fact that if I had just done this, if I had just done that, if only I had called him earlier, if I had talked to him on the previous day, it would have been different. Well, that's an egotistic illusion. We don't have control over other people's lives or how they live them or what they do. You know, we barely have control over our own lives.
In an interview with NPR, I loved what you said. You said before you take your own life, you have to try everything else.
Everything you know. It's always the step you didn't take. It's always the call you didn't make.
Well, I also in here, fairly quickly in the book, you talk about that his decision to die just gave you more resolve to live more fully, to live life more fully.
Absolutely. I'm pretty committed to that anyway, but this just did it for me, you know, pushed me right over the top, because I tried to kill myself when I was 14, so I know what that feels like. I think I know some of the things that went through his mind. Things that were like that went through my mind. I think the determination to just live as full a life as I can, I want to live it all up until there isn't anything left, you know?
You talked about Clark's grandfather committing suicide and kind of that legacy there.
Yes.
Was he aware of that there was a family legacy? And
He was aware of it, but I think that's why I say talk about it. Talk about it if it's in the family. Talk about what to do with it. Talk about it. Talk about what it means to have a suicide in the family that people know about. Talk about what it means to have a suicide in the family that is supposed to be a secret. Because it's never a secret. People always know. And as I said before, they think worse than what really happened. If they haven't been told what really happened, they will fantasize something much worse. And it will eat away at them, because it does that. I have just I've been involved with Hazel and for years and years, but one of the things that I've been so keen on since Clark's death, because he got sober at Hazelden. You know what that is?
Yes.
At
yes.
the treatment center mm-hmm. out in Minnesota. But now we're doing a letter out of Hazelden addressed to adolescents, talking about suicide and its link to drugs and alcohol. Because the link is it's like, where there are birds, there's a nest. You know, where there are trees, where there are leaves, there is a tree. It's very, very common. And it's because nobody talks about it, and it's previously taboo to talk about it. Nobody's going to tell you that.
Well, there's a song from an old Gatlin song. I used to work with Larry Gatlin. There's an old song that he says, "I've done enough dying today."
I recorded that. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I.
Da, 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 dee, dee.
It's beautiful.
Da, 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 dee. Yeah, a beautiful song.
And
I recorded it in probably 19, maybe in the 80s sometime.
I did not know that. Well, I had started working for Larry right after he got out of treatment for cocaine, so I was with him during that time. But I wonder if most of us, and this is really just to prime your pump, don't die a little each day from other reasons. Do we all just...
Well, we could look at it conversely. I mean, that's a perfect song for an alcoholic or a drug addict, you know.
It's
a perfect song because we're so dramatic when we're using, you know. We are so dramatic. But actually, the truth is we have to live a little more every day.
You also wrote that all of us have some suicide in our past or our future. Being out there and really in the thick of this subject, were you surprised? Is it just so prevalent that everybody's in denial about it?
Sure. They're in denial because it's a taboo. It's sort of like cancer was 50 years ago. You don't want to talk about it because in case you talk about it, somebody in the room would catch it. You know, that's the attitude. So if it can be talked about and spoken of, you know, it's a condition. I don't really believe it's an illness. I think it's a condition. I think that the thinking, the twist in the thinking, whether it's hereditary, whether it's induced, it doesn't much matter. It can be encouraged by the use of alcohol and so on. But also a lot of people can be drunk for a long time and not kill themselves. But those of us who have that precondition, that thing, that psychological pain component, we'll find a way, you know. It's an awful loss. It's a terrible loss. But the truth is, people get hit by cars, they get cancer, and we don't think that way about those people. We don't have this guilt and think that we have to, you know, resolve every problem we ever had and find out what we did that might have caused it. We don't do that.
I don't find a knowledgeable people that compassionate. It wasn't at a time that they thought suicide is a sin or... You know, I thought at one time, if you, they pretty much just were pretty hard on you.
Terrible. A resounding condemnation from all quarters. The spiritual quarter, you know, the state colluded. I mean, the state had a really good deal. I mean, the state, I mean, not just Tennessee or New York, but the state, period. Any state, anywhere, they had a real good deal going because they confiscated the property to suicide. They did everything they could to drum the family out of any kind of connection they might have with the church or the society or anything else. People were sent to Coventry. I mean, it was a terrible scam. It was a scam perpetrated originally by St. Augustine, because people killed themselves in our culture, Judeo-Christian culture, for all kinds of reasons, but St. Augustine said it was a sin, and then from then on after, we were treated like pariahs. You know, you could get killed for trying to kill yourself.
One of the things, and I know I have to wrap this up, was that you really, many times, talked about Clark's courage.
Yeah.
And I would like you to describe that.
Well, he had a rough time, I think, in his sobriety, but he had a lot of courage about it, and he took the steps that he could take, and he did what he could. There's another strange aspect of this, which I think is something we don't want to admit or confess or, you know, own up to, but sometimes that's just the way it's supposed to be. And my own feeling about Clark is that he didn't feel he could do what he had to do from where he was. And he had to move in some dramatic way, and this was his choice.
And do you feel like he is someplace?
Oh, sure. He's with me all the time. And he's done a lot. I mean, you know, he's been very, very busy. and I dream about him. He's very close. I think about him a lot. And I think he's present. So that's another gift of loss, is that you find out you don't ever really lose anybody.
Are you worried about Haley? Is that your granddaughter's
name? Hollis? No, I'm not worried about her. She's fabulous. And she knows the truth and talks about it and understands it. And she's a straight-shooting kid. I mean, she's had a very good education and a very high-priced education. She paid a high emotional price for this, but I think she understands a lot of things. She's like Clark. She's very like her father. Very intuitive, very funny, knows a lot of things that she doesn't know she knows.
You know, this isn't something that really goes away.
And well, no, you always have to deal with it.
Right, and I think, I mean, did you live for years? I mean, in the back of your mind, was it always there that Clark was susceptible to?
No, I never thought of that.
So you thought this was a surprise?
I never thought. That's one of the reasons it was such a shock. First of all, although he had a lot of problems with drugs and so on, I never imagined, and that's probably my denial, because, you know, with my having had a suicide attempt and his grandfather having killed himself, there was plenty of room for discussion, but it was never discussed. It never occurred to me.
So tell me, and this will be your last question so you can move on, how do you feel like God has used Clark's life now, or is using Clark's life now?
Oh, absolutely. He's using his life in my life and in his daughter's life, in the whole family's life. I mean, we all feel very close to my son. You know, we were a very close family anyway. But he's like, I don't know, he's like a little angel up there doing his stuff.